welcome back, friends. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday as we continue it with what is one of the signature texts and one of the really profoundly difficult texts of the book of Genesis, the sacrifice of Isaac. And we, in yesterday's session, if you haven't seen that, I think it might be worth starting there. Yesterday's session, we laid a little bit of the groundwork for this text. And today we continue with probably the more familiar part of the story, though there are some things in this story that I think maybe can be new, or at least we can read without thinking of. So I'm going in today in verse 5 of chapter 22, and I'm sorry, verse 6 of chapter 22, and we'll start there. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. Isaac said to his father Abraham, "Father," and he said, "Here I am, my son." He said, "The fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God himself will provide the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So the two of them walked on together. So this is one of those scenes that is kind of poignant with the things that aren't said, the kind of unspoken nature of some of the things in this scene of the text. These two go on. Now, we often have the impression that Isaac is a very young child here. That may not be accurate. It may be that this is a young man. He's clearly able to recognize that there's an animal missing. He's done this before, or at least he's familiar enough with the circumstances to say, "Hey, where's the lamb?" And as they walk together, he carries the wood. So he's got some strength, some physical ability. You know, it's possible that we're talking maybe even a older adolescent or a young teenager, perhaps. Anyway, as they walk on, he has this question. "I see the fire, I see the wood. Where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" And in the intro to this question, Michael, I think the most interesting thing here is that though they walk together, and I think this tells us what the author wants us to see, because it's they walk together, and he says, "Father," and Abraham answers, "Here I am, my son." And we've seen this exact language in the beginning of the passage. Now, clearly he knows where he is. They're walking together. I think that has very much more to do with the way this story is told than what's happening in the actual conversation.
Right. So fundamentally, what we have here is a series of nods to the mystery of what's happening. And these are all intentional. So you have the one who's ostensibly been called to be the offering, carrying, physically bearing the fuel for what that sacrifice would be, sort of a kind of in this case, he doesn't yet know that he's been called to be the sacrifice. So there's an unknown to the character that exists in that. There's this call to Abraham, which mimics the call that God has been making over and over again. Not just to Abraham, by the way. This has been happening throughout the Old Testament. And the characters, specifically, though, Abraham has responded over and over again, "Here I am." He says this same thing to his son. I'm right here. There's a once again, an emphasis upon the presence of Abraham, the faithfulness of Abraham, that God is, or that Abraham is true to his word. He's true to his son, the promise of the covenant. And then, of course, you know, Clint, I mean, I think the thing that sticks out in this section as well is Abraham says that God will provide the lamb. Is the lamb metaphorical? Is the lamb literal? The question of what lamb are you talking about, Abraham? What is the nature of your faith here is purposely not teased out. We don't know what Abraham means, and that's part of the mystery of this text.
It's really fascinating. You know, again, we hear Abraham answer Isaac with the exact echo of the way he answered God. God called Abraham. Abraham said, "Here I am." Now he says that as well to his son. Can he be faithful to both? Can he be faithful in both roles? What is required of him in his calling to God and in his calling to his son, his calling as father? And then, Michael, you make a really interesting point, the picture of what each person carries. You have Isaac with the wood, Abraham with the fire and knife. It may or may, it may be reading too much in, but what we have in that is the things that will be consumed, the sacrifice and the wood, the passive things, versus the things that will do the consuming. The knife will take the life of the sacrifice, and the fire will consume the body of the sacrifice and the wood. And so we have here that split that really characterizes the polarity of this story, the two sides of this story. And then exactly right, God will provide. Is this a statement of faith? Is this a declaration from Abraham that I'm not worried? Or is this a way of not telling Isaac exactly what's happening yet? A lot happening there, a lot of profound questions that don't have great answers. We'll continue then, verse 9. When they came to the place that God had shown him, Abraham built an altar there. He laid the wood in order. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Let's stop there. You know, again, historically, we see that it's easy to think that Isaac is easily subdued, that he's a small child, and that Isaac lays him there. There are some who suggest that Isaac may have shown a certain willingness, a certain fearlessness in this. Clearly, if he is large enough and strong enough to carry this bundle of wood, he could have put up some fight. And how that ensues, we don't know. But he is, it's all prepared. He is bound. There's a wonderful statue or painting, I think, called The Binding of Isaac, in which Isaac is almost the size of Abraham, and he kneels down, submitting himself both to father and to the God who is calling his father to do this. We don't have that answer, but it is a profound moment. So, Michael, anything to add there?
No, let's just keep
okay.
going here, Clint.
Then Abraham, verse 10, then Abraham reached out his hand, took the knife to kill his son, but the Lord's angel called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And Abraham looked up, saw a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering to his son. And then Abraham called the place, "The Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided." Here we have the part of the story that we know, the part of the story that to some extent makes the rest of the story bearable, that God provides an alternative. He sees that Abraham is apparently willing to go through with this, that he is on the very verge of doing as God has commanded, and he's called to stop. And again, he answers, "Here I am." And then God says the angel says a very interesting thing here. "Now I know that you fear God." And now we connect back to that first verse where it says that he was going to be tested. He has now passed the test. Something unknown is now known. Now, we can have all kinds of arguments about how could God not know, but in the way the text is told, this is the way that it comes to pass. We did not know the ultimate result, not only about Abraham, but about God. What would Abraham do, and what would God do? And now, as we end the story, we end with a known quantity, a man who is willing to be faithful despite the most bizarre and difficult challenge, and a God who will provide and is faithful. And these are now the things we know. It's a messy road to get there, but it ends up being a very powerful destination.
Yeah, so the temptation maybe here has a couple different orientations. Maybe one temptation is to look at a text like this and to say, you're overthinking it, right? This is just simply a story about God asking a guy to do something that they both kind of knew was a, you know, was just a test of faith. It was never going to go that way. You're taking this too seriously. Ultimately, Clint, it's all about what you just said, that fundamentally it was about just showing us a text like this is just showing us that God is the God who keeps promises, and Abraham is the kind of person who's willing to be faithful to God to do what God says. That, I think, is a really superficial reading of the text. There is so many undercurrents here of questions. Like, why does Abraham leave his servants behind? Why is it just him and Isaac? Why these symbols of who carries what? Why is it that they get up there and it's not a lamb as we heard it called before, but now it's called a ram. What's the significance of that? Has God provided something more or better or different than what would have been asked for in the first place? You know, these are all legitimate questions that have been asked, by the way, for thousands of years, first by Jewish scholars and then taken up by Christian scholars in the generations after Jesus Christ. This story compels us to see that in the narrative telling of God's encounter with people, there is as much question and struggle and doubt and wrestling as there is if we're honest about our own experience. Not the kind of experience where God asks you to give of a child. I'm allowing the reading of the text in that vein to step back to see some of its spiritual teaching for us. But I do think that there's a legitimate lesson in that there are some times when we are seeking to be faithful that the path ahead is not as well lit as we would like. It's merely about making the next step to the place of provision, even sometimes in the course of what seems to be perilous circumstances. And it is the God who we discover who provides meets us in that place. And if you've ever had that life experience of coming into a moment of supernatural provision where God has indeed been faithful and it becomes clear to you in that moment, there's a kind of holy experience in that, a kind of mountaintop experience, a really even an altar-ish kind of experience that's being described here. And so therefore it's fitting actually, and it's understandable why Christians later turned to this text and saw it as having deep spiritual import on our understanding of what God was doing with Abraham, and then later what God was willing to do with himself, with his own son in Jesus Christ. Of course, he stops Abraham's hand, but God never stops the death of Jesus. And so that connection gets made, and Christians begin to interpret the story through that lens as well. But you know, I just want to point out that I think be careful to not come to a story like this and let some of these uncomfortable tensions dissolve for you. I think the story is more beautiful because of them. And if you're willing to live with all of it together, you're going to find that there are far more answers than you might think with all the questions that are presented here.
This is a really divisive story, not in the sense that anyone fights about it, but in the sense that we've really historically gone one of two very different ways with it. And one of those ways is to simply point at Abram and say, this is the epitome of a person who's called to do a hard thing, that God asks them to give everything, to give it all. And we've treated Abram as a model of faith in that. And yes, Michael, I think even a forerunner to an image that we see in the New Testament of God offering his own son, Christ, for us. And then on the other side of the fence, we have looked at this and said, this text is troubling and hard and brutal and offensive. This is a God who tests a father by asking him to kill his son, and maybe worse, a father who seems willing to do it. And people on both sides have tried to minimize the other. And I think if you're willing to stand in the middle and wrestle with both of the elements, to wrestle with both of those realities, this is one of those stories that you begin to understand why some of the best biblical scholars in history have just said, this is one of the hardest texts there is. It is embarrassing and maddening and angering and beautiful and profound and comforting all at the same time. And not very many things can pull that off. And this story, I think, is maybe the epitome of that kind of text in the Old Testament, certainly in the book of Genesis.
Yeah, I think this has the same kind of troubling force to it as Jesus, as recorded in the Gospels, of saying, who is my disciple but someone who gives up their mother, their father, their brother. I think the word is hate.
Yeah.
Their mother and their father, right? This language of rejecting one's family for Jesus, this is troubling language. The Christian church struggles with it. I think there are moments in the text where we're confronted with very, very difficult allegiance questions. Ultimately, what is your allegiance towards? Who is the one who stands in the top priority? Maybe the thing about this story that's most disturbing is it's not didactic teaching. It's in narrative form. It presents a person who stands at the moment before giving up the most important thing in his life, who happens to be his living son, and that person is answering that question before our eyes. And that's it's astounding. And it's troubling. I mean, there's no way around that. I don't want to keep repeating a theme, but I want to encourage you that one of the key, I think, interpretive skills that you can bring to Scripture is a willingness, I would even use the word humility, to say that it doesn't always need to fit. It doesn't always need to reconcile into a Disney-esque kind of happy ending. That this story doesn't resolve into a beautiful major chord. It's got a lot of different chords at the ending of it. And in fact, there's some scholars who point to things that come and say that this may have permanently damaged Abraham's relationship with Sarah, that this may have a long tail in the family. We're not, going to be able to say that. That's speculative. But the idea that this has a long tail in reality, but yet this story is told in a way that offers us a kind of glimpse into the kind of person of faith that Abraham actually was, and there's something compelling and astounding and also troubling about it.
Yeah, it is the kind of story that really, I would say, be very cautious of people who express supreme confidence that they understand this story. I think this story has such depth in it that we cannot, with high degrees, say that, yeah, we have this one figured out. We know what this one means. This one is best, I think, best received with quiet, somber humility and trying to listen to some of what it says in spite of what it also says.
Because, Clint, who would stand before the face of God and dare God to test their allegiance or to test their faith? I mean, who would have the composure or the soul or the substance to do that? None. There's no creature that could stand before the Almighty God and say, test me. And we see a man at the juncture of the deepest form of that test here. It's a fundamental misappropriation of what we see happening between Isaac, Abraham, and God in this moment for us to walk into it with confident, know-it-all kind of spirits. I mean, none of us would feel that kind of confidence if we could identify in the moment with these characters. And so those who interpret it with that kind of confidence, that they should be met with suspicion.
Right. And then we will cover a little bit of this yet tomorrow without trying to rehash much of it. But do keep in mind that as we've said, these are also national stories. So in light of the fact that Israel looks upon neighbors who sacrifice children, this again, at the end of the story, is a story about how God is not that. The testing language is troubling. Abraham's willingness might be troubling. But ultimately, God does not allow, nor does God condone, nor does God require that of his people. And we leave the story knowing that, ultimately.
Friends, that'll be the last word for today. Thanks for being with us. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow as we wrap up this week, and we'll wrap up this theme here in the Old Testament.
Thanks.